Raise your hand if you can recite James 4, verse 13 through 14. Okay. You can turn there if you'd like. I will recite it for you, James 13 through 14. This has resonated with me this week for reasons that may be obvious. James 4, verse 13, come now, you who say today or tomorrow or, I don't know, February 17th, we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there. But what does James say? James says we shouldn't say that because we can't say that. Verse 14, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. And the truth is what? The truth is none of us know what's going to happen to us, the people we love, 24 hours from now, let alone 12 or 24 months from now. And James drives this point home with a humbling rhetorical Q&A. Question, for what is your life? Answer, it is even a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. So think about your life. What do you picture yourself doing this time tomorrow? Who are you going to be with? Imagine a year from now. How will your health be? How will your finances be? How will your family be? What city will you be in a year? It's a reasonable question to ask what city I will be in a year. James says we don't really know. Proverbs 27:1, I'll read for you, just reemphasizes this. Proverbs 27:1 says, you do not know what a day may bring forth. What will happen to you tomorrow, to the world tomorrow, to your family tomorrow? Proverbs says, and James says, and our own experience says, we don't know. The title of my message today, as Eric pointed out, was not a printing mistake. The title is Unknown. And my purpose is to talk about how to deal effectively, constructively, and positively with the unknown. And to do this by focusing on and consistently acting on what we do know and what we can know. If you remember nothing else, I hope you remember this and it, from today's message. And it's a quote that has guided me for a very long time. And the quote is this: maturity is the ability to endure uncertainty. Maturity is the ability to endure uncertainty. And whenever you read something like this, it's useful to read what's not said. And what's not said is that immaturity is the inability to deal with uncertainty. And I think the message is that it takes spiritual maturity to deal with the unknown. To become spiritually mature depends on developing our ability to endure the uncertainties of this life. So what uncertainties must we learn to endure? So think about the events of September 11th. And how did you feel when you first learned about it, and when you saw the first plane hit, and then the second plane hit, and then you heard about a third, and you heard about a fourth? And did you have a feeling of uncertainty about what could possibly be next? And the answer at that point in time was unknown. One of the first things I've done almost since then in the morning is I get up and I check the news online. And I joke at work that the reason I do this is I want to see if the world blew up while I was asleep. But it's not really a joke. That's why I get online to check the news, is you just don't know when you wake up what's going to have happened. Part of the reason I do that is because of what we do know. Hosea 5, verse 5. Hosea 5, verse 5 says, "The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore, Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. Judah also stumbles with them." And we understand this to mean that the modern nations of Israel, the United States, Great Britain, etc., Judah, the modern state of Israel, will stumble together. And not just stumble. Hosea 5, verse 7. Hosea 5, verse 7 says, in part, "A new moon shall devour them and their heritage." Meaning what? Meaning that those nations will fall and be devoured in a 30-day period. So we know that will happen. We just don't know when. And we don't know exactly how. And we just don't know, when we go to bed, what kind of a world we'll wake up to tomorrow. Think about the news we've woken up to in the past 2 weeks. We've woken up to the fact that North Korea vowed nuclear tests, quote, aimed at the United States. Their defense commission said, quote, "Settling accounts with the U.S. needs to be done with force, not with words." So, what is North Korea going to do with their nuclear capability? It's unknown. We woke up to news that Iran is, quote, "waging an intensified campaign to destabilize the Middle East." Isn't the Middle East unstable enough? I mean, why do they need to destroy other people's lives? What's going to be the outcome? And the answer is unknown. We woke up to warnings from Egypt's army chief about the risk of their state collapsing, to Syria threatening to attack Israel, to war in Mali, to stronger indications that Britain will leave the EU. You may not know that you woke up this week to the Dutch prime minister saying, quote, "The EU should have legal mechanisms for countries to leave the euro." So will that lead to the European Union going from 27 member states to 10 nations or groups of nations? We don't know. But doesn't it seem that day by day, event by event, the foundation is being laid for what we know is going to come to pass? One final example. We woke up this week to, quote, "a monumental occasion for ecumenical relations. The U.S. Roman Catholic Church and a group of Protestant denominations plan to formally agree to recognize each other's baptisms." So why does that matter? In our update on October 30th, 2009, we said the following, quote, "The Bible predicts that the Protestant daughter churches will ultimately return to the, quote, motherly fold of the Roman Catholic Church." So you and I woke up this week one, quote, monumental step closer to that being fulfilled. I don't know about you, but when I go to bed, I wonder what kind of a world I'm going to wake up to. And the answer is, I just don't know. And the challenge is, we have to learn to be spiritually mature enough to endure those uncertainties. So what do we know about the future? Revelation 12, verse 12, we actually know quite a bit. Revelation 12, verse 12 says, "Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time. So we know what Satan knows. His time is short. We know his wrath is directed at the church. We know some will be protected from it, and some will have to go through the Great Tribulation. And we know why they have to go through the Great Tribulation. You don't need to turn there, but Daniel 11, verse 35 says, to refine them and to purify them and to make them white. James 5, verse 11, again, you don't need to turn there. It tells us what else we know about the events that happened to us. You have seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. What is unknown is exactly when, and exactly how, and exactly to whom all these things will happen. There are many, many, many uncertainties we have to endure in this life. So let me ask you this. Do we know how to endure them? If you had to stand up in front of a class and teach people how to endure everything that we know is going to come to pass and everything we don't know, what would you say? My initial response came to me like this, and it was that I refused to answer the question on the grounds that I don't know the answer. And then I thought, you know, that's not actually true. The Bible is filled in virtually every book with examples and instructions on how to deal with uncertainty, how to become spiritually mature. 2 Peter 1, verse 2 and 3. So let's just prove to ourselves that we have everything we need to endure and to overcome. 2 Peter 1, verse 2, grace and peace be multiplied to you in the knowledge of God and of Jesus Christ our Lord. Verse 3, as his divine power has given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness. So this is an encouraging fact. There is nothing that we need in order to obtain salvation, to endure trials or tragedies. There's nothing that we need that God has not provided to us. His arm is not short that it cannot save. His ear is not heavy that it cannot hear. And he is not willing that any of us should perish. As Peter said, he has given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness. So what are we supposed to do with those things? What do we do in order to endure and overcome? Today we're going to discuss three keys to enduring and overcoming, three keys to becoming spiritually mature Christians. And those are, number one, our relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. Number two, our relationship with those in the church. And number three, our relationships with those outside the church. So I have a fairly, I have a group of guys that work for me that are really smart. And I say things like, these are the three keys to blank. And I go, really, are those the three keys? You sure there's not four? Are you sure there's not another three we should pay attention to? And so there may be other keys, but I would ask you to consider Matthew 5, verse 20. Matthew 5, verse 20. And this is an interesting verse. It says, for I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. So that's interesting, but to me what's more interesting are all the verses that follow. And they all have to do with relationships, with the brethren with our adversaries and enemies, with those we're angry at, with those that are angry at us, with spouses, ours and others, those in the world, those who are evil and abusive, and of course with God our Father. Christ says these are major salvational issues. So let's start with our relationship with God. If you want to flip over to John 15, verse 5. And the point I'd like you to take away from this is that having the strength and maturity to endure uncertainty and difficulty depends on having a consistently close relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. You cannot endure without it. John 15, verse 5 says, I am the vine and you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. For without me, you can do nothing. Meaning, we are dependent. But notice it doesn't say, don't do anything. It just says we are unable to do anything without Christ. Philippians 4:13, I'll read for you. It just reaffirms that concept. Philippians 4, verse 13 says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So we see a combination between relationship and action. So what are the fundamentals of a good relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ? So if you would raise your hand if you've never heard that you need to pray and study. Okay, everybody knows you need to pray and study. Then I'd like to talk about two other keys to building a right relationship with God. And those are purity or holiness, and trust or faith. And I've had conversations with people about this, and I know there are other things like obedience, for example, that's required. But I would suggest to you that those are consequences of our trust and consequences of trying to become holy. So have you ever struggled with faith? Why did you struggle with faith? What is it that made it difficult? And I think it's very simple. It's the unknown. And Winston Churchill said about prophecy that it's very easy to prophecy after the fact, right? The tough thing is to prophecy before an event happens. And I think that that is true of faith also. It's easier to have faith in retrospect. After a trial is done, after you get your medical results, for example, you can look back in retrospect and say, oh, God's working in my life. What's more difficult is to have faith and trust in the midst of it. When it's hard, or when it's dark, or when it's painful, or when the outcome is just unknown. What mature faith gives us is the ability to endure those uncertainties. I shared one of my favorite quotes with you. I'm going to share maybe my favorite verse in the entire Bible. And I think, you know, Christ left what is the most compelling example and the most compelling verse about how to deal with the unknown. And it teaches us how to think about trials and the unknown. 1 Peter 2, verse 20, if you want to turn over there. We'll read through verse 23. 1 Peter 2, verse 20. For what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. verse 21, "For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps." So why did Christ come to the earth as a man? He came to pay the price for what we do wrong. He came to be resurrected so we could have eternal life, and to set us an example of how to live a godly life in the midst of a God-rejecting, God-hating world. First Peter 2:23, "Who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten." And this is the part of the verse that I mentioned, one of the most valuable in all the Bible. "But he committed himself to him who judges righteously." So imagine yourself being beaten, rejected, spoken against, put on trial. The tendency is to want to take control and to try to grab whatever you can to control those circumstances or to fight back. And it says Christ didn't. Christ didn't circumvent God's commandments to try to control the outcome. Instead, he trusted. He trusted that God the Father knew. He knew the right thing to do at the right time in the right way. And one of the most fundamental keys for us to endure uncertainty and trials is to have that same trust. Pretty sure my uncle's not listening, so I can... There's this quote. It's like the perfect quote if you knew. I would leave it nameless. It said, "Someone once said, for peace of mind, resign as general manager of the universe." And I don't know if you have any relatives like this who like to tell everybody what to do, but that always makes me think of him. And it's good advice because the job is already taken, right? We don't have to try to run the universe. And a major key to keeping God's commandments in the face of the unknown is just to trust that, you know, sometimes to let go and let God. And that doesn't mean we disengage from actions. It doesn't mean we don't do what we're supposed to do. But I can promise you and me and everybody else, we cannot manhandle outcomes. We cannot make things happen, right? We have to plant the seed, water the seed, and hope it grows and pray that it grows. A major key is to not try to take everything into our own hands, but as Christ did, commit ourselves to him who judges righteously. For the sake of time, I'm going to briefly touch on purity, which I think is the second key to our relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. 1 Peter 1:15, which I'm sure we all know. 1 Peter 1:15 says, "As he who called you is holy, you also be holy in what? In all your conduct." And verse 14, "As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lusts." So we have not been called to have partially worldly and partially godly ways of living. We've been called to a comprehensively holy way of life. Hebrews 12:14 tells us how critical this is, not just to know it, but for us to strive to become perfect at doing it. Hebrews 12:14 says, "Eagerly pursue peace and holiness with all, without which no one will see the Lord." Pursue holiness without which no one will see the Lord. Our relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ is built on our trust and our faith and our striving to become holy. The second key to enduring and overcoming is our relationships with those in the church. I'll just cover two aspects of those relationships, both of which are in Matthew 18. It It's an easy chapter to go to. I bet I'm not going to say what you think I'm going to say about it, though. The first aspect I want to cover in Matthew 18, starting in verse 1, is not causing others to stumble. And we see here an amazing scene. In verse 1, Christ's disciples ask him, who is the greatest in the kingdom? Who's the top dog? What does it take? Is it courage, prophecy? You know, what is it? What's this fantastic thing? And I can imagine, may not be true, I can imagine them sitting there going, he's going to say some attribute that I have in spades, right? And it's going to be me. And what does Jesus do? So Jesus goes and he grabs a child and he puts the child in the midst of him, and he uses this child to teach these men what it means to be spiritually mature. Matthew 18, verse 3. Assuredly I say to you that unless you are converted and become as little children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. This is a salvational requirement. Verse 4, whoever humbles himself as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And I don't think I did this until preparing this message last night, but we should let that stick to our hearts forever. Whoever humbles himself is the greatest. Isaiah 57, verse 15, I'll read for you. Isaiah 57, verse 15 just reaffirms this. For thus says the high and lofty one who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy places with him who has a contrite and humble spirit. Back to Matthew 18, verse 6. Here Christ transitions to talking about the importance of relationships. Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me, so he's talking about those God's working with. Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. And I would suggest that the impact we have on others in the church is not only fundamental to our salvation, it is fundamental to their salvation. And I'm sure we all know 1 Corinthians 8, verse 11. It says, and because of your knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. So who might be caused to stumble when we do something wrong? The answer is, we don't know. So Christ says, be careful. Just be full of care regarding our relationships with those in the church. Matthew 18, verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. So there are other steps after this, but what makes this the most difficult verse in the entire Bible for every human being I've ever met? I would suggest it's the uncertainty, right? You don't know how your brother's going to react. You don't know how you're going to react to how your brother reacts. The fear of the unknown keeps many people from keeping this commandment. There's a supposedly Italian proverb, and it says this: he that will have a perfect brother must resign himself to remaining brotherless. Meaning what? Meaning that until I'm perfect, and until you're perfect, and until we're all perfect, there will be difficulties and conflicts and challenges between brethren. And if that wasn't the case, then we don't need this part of the Bible. But clearly Christ knows better than we do. It's funny that they have the millstone verse and this verse in the same chapter, because there have been times where I've thought, I'll take the millstone so I don't have to go to my brother. And there's no doubt that it's very difficult. But as hard as it is, I go back to the verse I mentioned before. Are we willing to commit ourselves to Him who judges righteously, to Him who instructs us righteously? In a paraphrase, C.S. Lewis, and I suspect many of us feel this way about this verse. We don't necessarily doubt that what God tells us is the best for us. What we are wondering is how painful the best will turn out to be. And I think, when I think about Matthew 18, that the most encouraging thing to focus on is not the unknown. The most encouraging thing to think about is the hope expressed at the end of the verse. If he hears you, you have gained. I won't have time to cover the third point, the relationship with those outside the church. So I'll just give you a couple verses to maybe think about. 1 Peter 2, verse 11 and 12. 1 Peter 2, verse 11. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles. Peter first tells us how to behave towards those outside the church. And next he tells us why to behave that way. 1 Peter 2, verse 12. Having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. So the way I think about this personally is doing good works is an investment in the future of the people that see them, regardless of how they react to it. I'm planting the seed, you water the seed, you're making an investment. And unless you know something I don't know, most investments take time to deliver a return. And it's just a useful way to think about that. Christ showed us in the church the godly way to live. We're supposed to show others a godly way to live. I have two conclusions today. I think we'd all agree that the world is going from bad to worse. We'd agree there are many things that are unknown to us. We don't know all the details. When will the Great Tribulation start? Am I going to have to go through it? Am I going to make it? We just don't know. We don't know what a day may bring forth. And it takes spiritual maturity to endure those uncertainties. And I would offer today that the surest and safest way to endure and to overcome is to focus on those relationships with God the Father, with each other, and those in the world. And to not focus on our fears about tomorrow, but what we can do today. One author said, wisdom is knowing what to do, and virtue is doing it. So let us all be mature doers of what we do know. So regarding our departure from Colorado, I'd like to end with this quote from top three philosophers of all time, Winnie the Pooh. And I think it expresses how Melissa and I feel about the brethren here. So in the quote, Piglet asks this. He says, will we be friends forever? Sorry, I messed up already. It's a good way to end. We'll be friends forever, won't we, Pooh? Asked Piglet. And Pooh answered, even longer.